Court. My name is Charles Samuels, and I'm here today representing Carolyn Lane Alvis on her appeal of the termination of parental rights. And I've laid out six assignments of error. I would like to avoid talking as much as possible about my first one for reasons that Mr. Morris pointed out in his brief, the Leave case. I'm not willing to concede it, but I do think he makes a good point. What I really want to focus on is Brandon Schwartz, the brother of Carolyn. Brandon Lane, the brother of Carolyn, and Will and Robin Schwartz, maternal aunt and uncle, and whether or not the division really, or the department really did an investigation that would allow the court, under the state law of 283, to make a consideration for deciding whether or not relative placement is more important, is a better choice than termination of parental rights. And a few years ago, I had a case, Bagley, where I made a family tree argument that led to the Bagley decision of affinity and consanguinity is the ways you are related to each other. I think there's another question here. Is a great aunt and uncle an immediate relative, as this court has previously ruled? I would argue they are. And in the Hawthorne matter, Your Honors, I think we'll see that this court has made a consideration about whether or not a maternal great aunt is an appropriate person to be considered. In that case, what happened was social services had never investigated her. And she had never come forward because, as we all know, she doesn't have a duty to come forward, even though social services has a duty to investigate. Well, when she came to court, however, she testified. And this court then held, after the termination appeal, that because the court was still able to make a consideration as to her appropriateness because of her appearance and testimony, the error was harmless that social services had not investigated. But that underscores the fact that it was an error, they had not investigated her.
Can I ask you a question about the statute? I'm a little unclear about the statute, 16.1283, second paragraph of A, any order terminating residential parental rights shall be accompanied by an order granting of custody or guardianship to a relative or other interested individual. So the determination of whether to grant custody to a relative occurs effectively after termination, as I read the statute.
I believe.
But your argument seems to be that the DSS has to grant custody to a relative in lieu of termination.
That is my argument, Judge.
And that seems to be somewhat inconsistent with that statute. I know we have language out there that seems to suggest it's a prior determination to be made, but that seems to be inconsistent with my read of the statute.
If I look at Section A1 of 283, any order transferring custody of the child to a relative or other interested individual shall be entered upon a finding based on preponderance that the relative is one of these multiple things. And the court's transferring this could provide for any terms or conditions which would promote the child's interest and welfare. And then I believe the next paragraph is the one Your Honor references. Any order terminating residual rights shall be accompanied by an order.
Well, it's that. It's the second paragraph of A that it says any order terminating parental rights shall be accompanied by an order continuing or granting custody to the local board of social services licensed child placing agency or granting custody to a relative. So, the argument that I hear and I'm seeing you make is that relative placement is in lieu of termination.
I believe relative placement absolutely can be in lieu of termination. The
but
department
must it be in lieu of termination?
No, it must. It does not. It is not a requisite, but it is a consideration that can occur under the other code sections, including 16.1281, 16.1278.2, and I believe 16.1281, all consider relatives or others. And the question is, before termination, the first goal is return home, relative placement, then termination, possibly adoption. And before we even get to termination, we should have done the things necessary to consider a relative. Even if, at the end of the day, Ms. Lane Alvis was never going to get herself together to the point where she could take care of her children herself and her rights were terminated, there still should have been an investigation prior to the termination that gave the court the ability, the trial court the ability to determine whether or not there was an appropriate relative, whether or not they're going to terminate.
Well, they investigated both brothers and even the long-term girlfriend of one of the brothers, right?
Yes, sir.
And felt that because of either drug abuse or run-ins with the law, that none of them were suitable. Is that right?
Even in my brief, I said Adam Lane can't be considered. He had two convictions for 18.2, 57.2 on his record. That's a barrier crime under a different code section.
But the other brother that you referred to?
The other brother, at some point, for a temporary or short period of time, was incarcerated while this case traveled through the juvenile courts. And once they found out he was incarcerated, social services decided they did not have to look at him anymore. And that's simply not the law. They need to look at any reasonable placement, any relative placement, whether or not that person comes forward. Here, Mr. Brandon Lane did come to some of the juvenile court hearings, but they never did anything. And that's the problem we have with Brandon, is that he doesn't, at this point, there was no investigation to allow the court to decide whether or not he should be considered as a relative placement.
So let's move to the Schwartzes, too, because you emphasize them a lot. And let's assume that, you know, they should have considered the great aunt and uncle, even if they don't have to. My understanding is that they called them numerous times and never got a call back once they got her on the phone, but that they never attended any court hearings, didn't express any interest in taking the children on. So how much more does Department of Social Services have to do?
Your Honor, I think in this day and age, in order to say with a straight face that as DSS we investigated this couple, informing them one time of one family partnership meeting, and then it's unclear to me if they actually did call at every partnership meeting or after that first one if they never called. It's also unclear if they ever left a message informing them, hey, we're here for this meeting, you can call in on this number. We don't have that information in front of us. But at the bare bones, you can Google them. You could look to see if they have a Facebook page. You could do a record search and get their address.
They did reach her on the phone once,
right? And did not even ask for her address.
Does your argument require reversal of the termination decision, or does it just require reversal of the subsequent placement decision by the trial court?
At the end of the day, I want to answer your question, Judge. At the end of the day, what I'm hoping your honors will do is remand this with instructions for social services to prevent evidence of their investigation of these two parties, in order for the judge to be able to make real consideration of this fact.
What you hope and what we're required to do may be two different things. Are we required under case law to reverse the termination of parental rights, or is it simply necessary, if we accept your argument, to reverse the decision regarding placement and tell the court, think about relative placement rather than DSS placement?
Your Honor can do either. You don't have to reverse the TPR. It would be our preference for you to, because I believe that maintaining that relationship with the children is in the children's best interest. However, technically speaking, you could do either way. I do want to point out, though, that whichever way it happens, the courts have said that the courts must carefully undertake a deliberate evaluation and not just a casual inquiry. And a phone call, a message, and...
Did we say that in the context of termination, or did we say that in context of pre-termination placement?
I do not recall, Judge. It was a situation where the court also said they weren't going to define what an investigation of the maternal grandmother in that case was, but that it was something that needed to happen as a serious thing instead of a passing, well, they're not here, so they lose. Again, parents are great when they are able to provide family members to care for their children or to provide family members for the social services to investigate. But those family members are under no obligation to make themselves known to social services. It's social services' requirement, mandate, to investigate to see if there are family members that are available. Now, I know they don't have to move heaven and earth to find family members, but we have two here that are ready to roll.
The great aunt and the great uncle
are the children's great aunt and great uncle and Ms. your client's aunt and uncle?
That is how it was described at trial. Yes, sir. And that's my understanding of the reality as well. But social services said it was the maternal aunt and uncle of Carolyn Lane Alvis.
So her mother's either sister or brother
at any
and
rate,
spouse.
At any rate, they are related by blood. One of them is, yes, sir. And the other by a family.
I just wasn't sure if we were talking about the great-great aunt and uncle
of the children.
Or...
No, that would be, I think, probably reach too far.
Okay.
So that's really the main crux of this. You know, I have concerns about social services being able to simply say to a third-party vendor, whatever you think she needs to do, and we'll just follow up with you from time to time to see how things are going. I don't really believe that's an appropriate way for social services to try to restore a mother.
But doesn't the statute allow that? Well, first place, two-part question. Here, didn't Department of Social Services do a number of these things with Ms. Lane Alvis themselves? But when it came to the mental health aspects of it, they used Spectrum to do it.
Mr. Morse and I have a difference of opinion on what social services did. In his brief, you'll see he makes a litany of things that were offered. It's unclear if they were offered through social services or through Spectrum. Social services, as I recall from the transcript, specifically offered two safety plans before the children came into care. Then Ms. Lane Alvis told them she was homeless, she needed to find a place to live, she told them where she was going. They did not look into the house, they didn't worry about it, they said that was fine. She went there, she was a victim of abuse. And so within 2 weeks of moving in, she took her family and moved out. A few weeks after that, social services went into that place, were aghast at the by what they saw in the home, and that was when the children were removed. And that's my first concern, is what services were really provided there besides a safety plan and their blessing to go live here. Then you have the second safety plan, and then you have the ability for the FPMs and her work with Spectrum, and I believe one referral to RBHA. And this is a woman with who is, you know, borderline functioning IQ. She has, it would appear through the reading of this, that she at least has a marijuana problem, if not something else. And she needed help working through those. More help than a single mental health service provider could provide. And I don't believe social services did what they needed to do to help her out. But even if they did, we still come back to the family members. And that's really, I think, the crux of this is the court has previously declined.
Just to let you know you're going to.
Oh, yes, sir. The court has previously declined to make a decision of what degree the investigation has to do. And I'm not asking you to do that today. But I am asking you to state unequivocally that some phone calls and nothing for Brandon besides the noticing that he was incarcerated for a short period of time is not sufficient for an investigation for social services to give the judge what he needs to make that consideration, that careful factual evaluation. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Sanders. Good morning, Mr. Morris.
Good morning.
May it please the court, Matthew Morris on behalf of the Richmond Department of Social Services. The appellant essentially has presented four separate substantive arguments, and so the department has responses to those arguments, which I will summarize briefly, and then, absent any questions of the court, I'll double back and go into more detail specifically on the two topics that was largely discussed in the appellant's time. As to the custodian issue, the department representative did not have to be a custodian in order to properly authenticate the record in question and to testify to its contents. And in any event, her testimony or that specific evidence, the omission of it, did not materially affect the outcome of the case. The trial court did properly conclude that reasonable efforts were made or deemed to have been made prior to the removal of the second child, and I think the affidavit that was presented described the reasons, and it wasn't just the substance exposure of the child when the child was born, but it also included the efforts that the department had been making with Ms. Lane Alvis for over a year leading up to her birth to no avail, and the expert opinion.
Involving the other removed children.
Yes, sir. And the expert opinion that she was not capable of parenting any children. As to the relative placements, the department did make reasonable efforts and investigated them appropriately. The two relatives in question, for Brandon Lane.
Well, just on a summary or two real quickly, the the termination was not based on subpart C at all. It was only on subparts B, 1, and 2. Right?
That's correct. I think that the appellant was appealing both the abuse and neglect and disposition of the initial foster care plan for that younger child, as well as the termination of the younger child. So, yes, when it gets to termination, the department was proceeding on B, which is that it's not reasonably likely that that child could have been returned to her within a practical period of time. And so, in other words, it wouldn't have mattered how much more time you needed to give Ms. Lane Alvis for that, or and that there were no additional efforts were required, because the trial court already had seen what the department had done up to that point with the other children. That evidence is directly applicable to the younger child.
Do you agree that under at least our current state of the case law, that DSS has an affirmative duty to investigate relative placement prior to termination, regardless of the language in the statute?
Absolutely, Judge, and the department did that here.
Okay, tell me what was done in the investigation of relative placement regarding the Schwartzes.
Ebony Malone, the social worker, received the information from Ms. Lane Alvis that she had this aunt or uncle. So first of all, the department would argue that a great aunt or uncle does not qualify as immediate relative under the plain language. But even if it did, reasonable efforts were made because Ms. Malone got in contact with, I believe it was Robin Schwartz, it was Will and Robin, actually had a phone conversation with her and then invited her to attend family planning meetings, which the department held with Ms. Lane Alvis periodically, every 90 days. And then at the meeting, they tried to contact Ms. Schwartz, and I would agree it wasn't clear whether they had tried at every family planning meeting. I believe she said she did, to try to contact the Schwartzes, and they did not answer. And she did state unequivocally that the Schwartzes never made any other follow-up attempts. So the department's position, or to contact the department, so the department's position there is, what else? It would not have been reasonable to expect the department to do anything else. The appellant concedes that the department did not have to conduct a home study for this relative in the appellant's brief. So beyond, I mean, you know, she has a phone conversation with her, tells her what's going on. The great aunt and uncle clearly know that the child is in foster care and that they're meeting periodically to discuss it, but no further follow-up is made. I think that
I think you make the statement that they don't ever attend any hearings at court.
They did not attend any court hearings at court.
Do they know about them? How did they know about the court hearings?
Ms. Malone told her. Okay. Well, Ms. Malone, I don't know if Ms. Malone told her about the court hearings, but she did tell her about the family planning meeting.
So
there
was. Don't know if they knew about the court hearings.
Don't know if they knew about
the family planning. At least one of the family planning.
Yes, they did know about that.
Was this a court-directed study of the Schwartzes?
No, there was never any direction from the court to conduct any study of the Schwartzes.
Doesn't the court have to direct the investigation under A1, under 283A1?
The department has the burden to present evidence for the court's consideration, and I believe the department did that. As far as the courts, I think in order to transfer custody to a relative under the statute, the court needs information that they're willing and able and suitable.
So which of those provisions of 283A1 that the court is to obtain information on, which of those subdivisions did the court find didn't apply here?
Well, I don't think the court specifically addressed it. I think the court simply made the ruling that the department had made reasonable efforts towards attempting to engage the family members.
In other words, the court doesn't have the duty to direct further investigation into someone or a couple that the department is otherwise deemed to be unreasonable for placement.
That's correct, Judge. And so I think that is the standard, is reasonable to investigate reasonable options for immediate family members, not to make extraordinary efforts for remote family members. I think that the Schwartzes really kind of fall into the category of a vain and useless undertaking, as the language that the court used.
Was it essentially the department's position that if we can't even get them to participate in the preliminary matters regarding any willingness to interact with the child or with our department, how on earth are we supposed to find that they're reasonable?
That's correct, Judge. I don't think that the burden on the department would be essentially to become bounty hunters trying to track people down and forcing them to engage in the proceedings regarding these children that they are aware are in foster care.
Can you comment on the brother, I think it's Brandon Lane.
Yes, sir.
That Mr. Samuels noted was incarcerated during part of this period.
Yes.
But presumably there's more to the concern other than perhaps someone is incarcerated but is otherwise an exemplary citizen.
Yeah, well, first of all, the department...
Wrongly incarcerated or perhaps paid his dues to society.
Yes, I think in the context of these facts, which is you have one child that's been in foster care for over a year, and then by the time we get to trial, over 2 years, you're dealing with issues of needing to meet the goal of permanence and stability for the best interest of the child. And then, even at the time of trial, the younger child had been in foster care for over a year. I would take issue with the characterization that his incarceration was, quote, temporary or short. The record does not exactly indicate how long, and I don't want to speak outside the record, but it's quite possible the department simply did not know where he was incarcerated or what for or have any way. But I think that the department, as the prevailing party, is entitled to all reasonable inferences of fact. And here's the facts that we know about Brandon Lane. The department was considering him for placement. Ms. Miller testified to that. He did appear, as appellant concedes, at one of the district court hearings where he was tested for drugs. So clearly he was being considered for placement at that time. That was in August of 2015. That's on the record, page 387. The court's record of proceeding notes his presence there. Then at some point later on,
did he test positive or negative?
Negative. He tested negative in court, and at some point later on, he gets reincarcerated, is the word Ms. Malone used. So clearly, he's aware that this child is in foster care. He's aware that the department was looking at him at that point for possible consideration for placement. So you get to the time of trial, and he's either still incarcerated, or if he's gotten out, he hasn't made any efforts presumably to contact the department. I mean, that's all we have, is that he was incarcerated. So the department's position is, yes, incarceration in and of itself, it demonstrates an inherent instability.
But
and
going back to my question about the Schwartzes, it seems that we've held that the agency seeking termination has the burden to show that no reasonable alternatives exist. Relatives who may be considered as alternatives have no duty to present themselves as such. So you told me that the Schwartzes were excluded because they didn't follow up. But it seems to me that under this Sauer case, it's the obligation of the agency to show why they're not appropriate.
Well, I think the reason is just that, is that the department made the effort to contact them, said what was going on, and then they did not make any kind of effort to follow up with the department, didn't attend the meeting, didn't respond to phone calls, didn't call the department to ask about the children's well-being at any point.
But did they do any type of home study? Did they investigate? I mean, did they go out and affirmatively try to determine whether there was would be a problem with relative problems?
No, they did not, and I think the department's position is it would not be reasonable to waste those resources when we don't have an indication.
I'm not concerned about the department's position. I'm concerned about what the case law requires. And we seem to have required a much more detailed investigation than just, hey, you want to adopt some kids?
No, I think that the department did present evidence with regards to the Schwartzes, and that is what is required at trial for the court's consideration. I think the trial court had all the information it needed about the Schwartzes, which was they were great aunts and uncles, so again, the department position, not immediate relatives, and that they simply did not respond to the department's attempts to engage them and get them involved in these children's lives.
Does the record show how many times Schwartzes were contacted either successfully or unsuccessfully?
Ms. Malone, I believe the record indicates that she did try to contact them multiple times, so there were multiple phone calls that they did not respond to. She ended up talking with them once. That was prior to the family planning meeting that she told them about was taking place. They did not attend that meeting. She tried to call her from that meeting. no answer, and then no follow-up from the Schwartzes beyond that. And then Ms. Malone also did indicate somewhere in the record that, you know, she attempted to make additional phone calls, but to no avail.
Did they investigate the home?
They did not investigate the home.
That seems to be the basis for our reversing in Sauer.
Well, in Sauer,
to exhaust its potential viable alternatives, the record clearly indicates the department failed to investigate the grandmother's home.
Well, the court also noted that, I think, first of all, we get into the attenuation of what makes it an immediate relative. The grandmother in Sauer lived with the parent. And when you get into the whole reason why you want to place with relatives as an alternative to terminating the parental rights in the first place, is so that the children can maintain a connection with the parents. There's no evidence that the Schwartzes had had anything to do with these children at any point. It was pretty clear in the Sauer case that, you know, the grandmother was obviously connected with the father because they lived together. And in the Hawthorne case, I think the key, that was really the key distinction in Hawthorne. The court was talking about a great aunt that was considered for placement, but the department knew about her existence and did nothing to try and contact her. So I would contrast that with Ms. Malone's efforts in this case, and she did make numerous efforts to try and contact the Schwartzes, and the appellant even concedes that a home study is not required for the department to do. I think the department reasonably needs more information and needs to gauge the interest of remote relatives before they go out and try to examine whether or not they are appropriate. As to the department's mandate to provide services, or the appellant's contention that the trial court erred in ruling that the department did not inappropriately transfer their mandate to provide service to third party, the court is correct. The code specifically recognizes that the use of third-party rehabilitative agencies under the various grounds for termination. It refers to public or private, social, medical, mental health, or other rehabilitative agencies. And I would, again, agree that there's a factual dispute. I think the record clearly indicates that Ms. Malone did not solely rely on this mental health support provider.
Did the court specifically address this relative placement issue? It's not in the order, but did it orally from the bench specifically address why relative placement wasn't appropriate?
They did not Judge Hairston did not specifically mention Brandon Lane of the Schwartzes by name. I believe the record, just from my recollection, was that he said that the department made all the reasonable efforts that were required of it.
Generically,
yes, sir. And particularly in light of the adoptive placement that the children had waiting for them, contrast that with Brandon Lane's incarceration and his sort of unknown status at that time. I don't think the trial court erred. I think the trial court had all the evidence it needed with regards to both the Schwartzes and as to Brandon Lane that it needed to make the conclusion that the department made reasonable efforts. So for those reasons, I would ask the court to affirm the trial court's decision.
And the requirement that only immediate family has to be investigated for possible placement, which you say would include an aunt and uncle, but not a great aunt and uncle.
That would be the department's contention.
I know, but what do you base that on?
Well, I think just plain language. I think that the Sauer I think the standard was stated, I believe, in both Sauer and Hawthorne. But again, I think that the key is that it's reasonable options for, regardless of whether they're immediate or more remote. We don't have any evidence that the Schwartzes, other than their biological connection as the great aunt or uncle, had much to do with the lives of these children. Clearly, they weren't.
If the aunt and uncle had lived with the family,
then it might be different. Yes, sir. Then it would be more comparable to the Sauer case, but clearly they did not. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Samuels, you have your rebuttal time.
Mr. Samuels, there's one question I wanted to pose to you that I neglected. Your assignments of error numbers 2 and number 5 contain no legal argument, no citation to cases. I think you mentioned maybe a standard of review case.
And then reference the other assignments of error.
Why shouldn't we consider those arguments waived under 5A20?
As referenced under the other code sections, Your Honor, should you decide under those two to waive them, I can't stop you from doing that.
Okay.
And I'd ask that you not do that, of course, because I do explain exactly the problems with those, with what I believe was error in the trial court under, I believe it was 3 and 4.
Okay.
I want to hit on incarceration really quick. If incarceration alone can't be the reason to terminate a parent's residual parental rights, how can it be enough to prevent social services from conducting a full investigation or a serious investigation instead of a casual inquiry into Brandon Lane?
Well, the rights a parent has are different. The right a parent has is different than someone who's a non-parent.
Yes, sir. But if the goal of the courts, the goal of the state is to keep families together, the lodestar being the child's best interest, certainly we must consider the importance of familial contact before we consider termination of parental rights.
Do you think a past incarceration would be viewed differently than perhaps one that occurs during the course of the proceedings?
It depends on what the incarceration is for, Judge. If I was incarcerated for failing to pay a number of parking tickets, that's very different than if I was incarcerated for punching people on the street randomly or for a significant drug possession charge. So I do think there is a change there. As far as your question about no duty to direct versus ability to make a carefully considered evaluation, without being able to make that consideration, social services has not provided the judge with what he needs, whether or not he's directed them to do the investigation. The General Assembly has made them do that. And Judge, the immediacy issue of relative, if you're a great aunt, in Hawthorne, that was sufficient for this court to believe that she met the requirements of a relative. The statute just says relative. The case law says immediate relative. And lastly, Judge, in Hawthorne, the great aunt appeared, and so she gave the consideration. She wasn't able to be. The court said there was harmless error that they hadn't done it. In other cases, if they don't appear, but they've heard evidence about the lifestyle, like in Sauer, where they heard about the lifestyle of the maternal grandmother, the court said that was sufficient. But we have something different here. We have neither of those situations. They didn't appear, but you also heard nothing about them except for a one-sentence thing about an incarceration or a few lines about phone calls. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Samuels. We will greet counsel, then the court will take a brief recess.